I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone, touchdown, touchdown.
Welcome to hour number three of One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown here in Buffalo. We're broadcasting from our homes. We'll be back on MSG perhaps in the next month or two. At some point in the next decade, we'll be back on television. But anyway, we're pleased to be joined right now by ESPN NFL Nation reporter. He covers the Saints. He's been covering the Saints since 2005. He's a contributor to ESPN Sports Center and ESPN Radio. Mike Triplett, thanks for coming on with us. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown here in Buffalo. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Mike. Obviously, your phone might have been ringing off the hook. You cover the Saints. Drew Brees had the statement about the kneeling with a flag and then the apology, and of course his teammates were asked to chime in on it. Where does it all sit now, maybe 24, 48 hours after the fact?
Well, I mean, I think they've taken some positive steps yesterday. They had a one-hour virtual team meeting that had been previously scheduled, but the meeting became all about this, and it was described by players to me as a pretty positive outlet, not necessarily positive comments made all around. I mean, people were getting things, very important things off their chest. Somebody said it was a vulnerable conversation, an important conversation, but that was good. And I think just as importantly, a lot of other team leaders stepped up to sort of provide a path forward. They're not letting Drew Brees off the hook at all. Obviously, a lot of them had some strong words about hurt and anger and disappointment in him, and that's going to continue. But they did accept his apology, guys like DeMario Davis and Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara yesterday. And they're going to hold him accountable the accountability that he's going to, his actions are going to back up his heartfelt apologies. They know he's at least going to make the effort to make up for this.
Mike, how would you characterize the strength and maybe fabric of that locker room? Is it tight-knit where it can handle and weather something like this, knowing how raw emotions are not only in that locker room but this country right now?
Well, I think this is a good example of how that's such a tough generalization to make. I mean, we say it all the time. They've got a good locker room. Oh, this is a good locker room. You get tested when you face adversity. I've covered a lot of teams. The best, they always have great locker rooms when they're winning. When they're 0-3, you find out what kind of a locker room you have. This is that magnified, I mean, we obviously saw a locker room divide. And you can't speak for everybody on that team. There's some people who will probably never forgive Brees and might have trouble, playing alongside him. But one thing I can say with certainty is they have a lot of really high character leaders who are already in the first 24 hours, showing that leadership. Like I said, Malcolm Jenkins, by being as open and honest with why he was hurt by Brees, but then still being willing to talk to Brees. DeMario Davis talking about, how he embraces Drew's apology and wants to move forward from there. The leadership that has been shown has been pretty impressive. So it does appear that they at least have a lot of core leaders who are going to make the effort to get through this.
What did Sean Payton? What was his message perceived as? What did he have to say about all of this to his team? Do you know?
Well, um, I don't. I didn't get any specific comments about what Sean Payton has said to the team, but players did say that they value the way he's led them through this. He hasn't tried to ignore it. He hasn't tried to say, don't talk about this stuff, just focus on football. He's not doing any of that. He gave them this forum. He sees the value in them really having these important conversations, and he's not trying to censor that one bit. He's not trying to, you know, push any of his opinions on anybody in this situation, and he wants to make sure that they hash it out. And he did go on social media, the same thing I said about how as soon as DeMario Davis sort of went on CNN and ESPN yesterday and accepted Breeze's apology, he said, that's why you're a great man, DeMario. This is what I love about our team. So, you know, he's promoting the team finding a way to heal itself.
So, Mike, with respect to off-season programs this spring and probably portions of the summer, in a climate and time where coaches who are largely known as control freaks, for lack of a better term, are trying to make contact and hold mm-hmm. players to a structure no matter where they are across the country. Mm-hmm. The Saints have kind of gone against the grain a little bit with foregoing an off-season program. What have you gotten from, you know, the coaching, you know, whether it's Coach Payton or anybody else on the staff, yep. as to why that decision was made and why they feel comfortable with that decision?
Right. Well, first of all, they have been in contact. I mean, that team meeting that I talked about yesterday was already pre-scheduled. They've had others like it. And individual position coaches are in contact with their players. They have playbooks. They have some, you know, conditioning guidelines. But I think the biggest point that the Saints were trying to make was, instead of watching your calendar, I might have to fly back on June 1st. I might have to fly back on June 10th. I'm waiting to see when the Saints are going to have me in. I don't know if we're going to do 4 weeks of practice or 1 week of practice. They just said right at the beginning, look, you guys focus on your families. You focus on getting in a conditioning routine. You focus on coming here, hopefully for a full training camp at the end of July, in the best shape of your life and ready to go to work then. And they were the first team to say that. And, you know, while others were still holding out hope, it may turn out that that's what every team in the NFL ends up doing because of the timeline we're on right now.
You know, the New Orleans Saints have been in the mix. And by the way, we're talking to Mike Triplett, been covering the Saints since 2005. The Saints have been had their window open ever since, you know, 2 years ago when were on the wrong end of a missed pass interference call in the NFC Championship game that ultimately led the Rams to the Super Bowl. Last year, the rule change that they spearheaded could not have been botched any worse by the NFL, and the way it was done and the way it was passed and everything about it. And now this year they signed Jameis Winston. This is a team that's changing and evolving. Where does their window stand? How good do the Saints expect to be, and how much have they changed since 2 years ago when a lot of people think they were a Super Bowl team?
Yeah, 3 years in a row now. They actually had the best regular season record in the NFL over the last 3 years. 11 wins, 13 wins, 13 wins. I mean, that is obviously a team that is right there on the cusp. It's actually the first time in Saints history they've won 13 games back-to-back years. And that's what you want. You want to be in the mix. And I think they'll still be right there. Obviously, they've got to pull it off in the postseason, and that's the hurdle that they, you know, can't seem to get past, and that window probably is shrinking. But this team is still every bit as talented as those teams you just mentioned. And more so than maybe in Drew Brees' absolute prime when they were throwing for 5,400 yards, 5,500 yards, over 5,000 yards as many times as he did. They're way more balanced. They have a defense that can win games from. They have running backs that can win games from, an offensive line. And I think that's what we've seen in recent years. And I think their biggest offseason addition is probably veteran receiver Emmanuel Sanders, because I think that's been their biggest deficiency the last 2 years, is not enough go-to receivers beyond Michael Thomas. But there's no question that window is shrinking. This, a lot of indications this will probably be Drew Brees' last season. They need to decide if Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill or a quarterback to be named is their next quarterback. This would ideally be the time to try to win while they have as much talent as they do.
And speaking of those receiving targets, Mike, you know, you mentioned Sanders being a new addition to kind of pair with Thomas. I know they have Jared Cook at tight end, and then they make, you know, the draft choice of Adam Trautman, the pass-catching tight end from Dayton, who I saw down at the Senior Bowl, had a really good week. With the increased interest in utilizing more 12 personnel the last year or so, can you foresee a situation where maybe Sean Payton turns to that personnel grouping more, provided Trautman provides, you know, proves to be quick on the uptake in this truncated offseason?
Yeah, well, that you just said it at the end there. This offseason in particular could make it hard for a guy you're projecting to make a big leap, but there's no doubt they'll find a role for him. This team could lead 12 personnel. This team could have, like, six tight ends on the field. You know, Sean Payton's creativity and versatility. Taysom Hill plays, you know, sort of a hybrid tight end position for them. They drafted another quarterback, Tommy Stevens, who does that same thing, to play a little tight end for them. Josh Hill is a valuable tight end for them as well. So, there's really no use dwelling on what the base offense is in New Orleans, because you know Sean Payton will throw 14 different formations at you in the first 15 plays. But there's no doubt that it's not just going to be a team that throws the ball to three wide receivers and they run deep. It's a team that will rely heavily on the tight end throwing the ball to running backs out of the backfield just as much as that.
Taysom Hill is always a story because of the way Sean Payton uses him and his ability to get it done when he gets on the field. How is that going to evolve in the near future?
I think for this year, they genuinely believe he could be the next starting quarterback of this team. They're not married to him, obviously, because they brought in Jameis Winston and they'll consider other options, but they really believe, and I would almost paint him as the front runner right now to be the successor to Drew Brees. But in the meantime, they're not just going to lock him away and save him for 2021. He's going to continue to be one of the most valuable playmakers on this team. I mean, he was probably the best or the most effective playmaker on the field for them in their playoff loss to Minnesota as a runner, as a receiver. And he's going to continue to do things, and that's why it was so valuable for them to bring in a Jameis Winston who can be ready to go in the game if Drew Brees gets hurt. So they're not just saving Taysom Hill in a backup QB role.
And then just with respect to A.J. Klein, obviously Sean McDermott knows him pretty well, having spent time with him in Carolina. But for Bills fans, he's largely an unknown. So can you just shed a little light on maybe what the Bills are getting in linebacker A.J. Klein?
Yeah, he was a really valuable addition for the Saints over the last 3 years. He actually arrived in 2017 when they began this 3-year run of 11, 13, 13 wins and playoff runs each year. And the first year they brought him in, he became their captain, middle linebacker, signal caller. And then the last 2 years he kind of moved over to the strong side, but he has that versatility also to be the linebacker, you know, when they only have two linebackers on the field, who can drop back in coverage. So just one of those, you know, versatile, experienced veterans. Before they signed him, he was in Carolina, and sometimes he backed up Luke Kuechly when Kuechly was hurt. Sometimes he backed up Thomas Davis when Thomas Davis was hurt, which is the ultimate versatility behind those two guys. So he's been a captain, and he's been a guy who's played a variety of positions. He's been a guy who's worn the green dot on his helmet and called the signal. So obviously a lot of value for guys who can do that in the NFL.
One of the other things you've done, Mike, since there is no NFL football offseason going on, you also delved into the college ranks, and you built up and it's pretty interesting to see you put together an NFL lineup from different states of the union, you know, from Alabama, Ohio, LSU, different colleges that could really line up a pretty good NFL team. What stood out to you about that project?
Well, we had a lot of fun doing that. We put it together sort of a panel, because there's no, like, just – can't just type in, you know, stats or a computer formula. We wanted, like, some humans choosing it, and so we made our standard trying to win the Super Bowl in 2020. You know, so, like, for instance, when we selected our Big Ten roster, we had to choose between Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Russell Wilson, and the final voting, if I remember, was 4-3-2, but Wilson won that job because the idea is he would be the best equipped to win the Super Bowl this year. Obviously, a lifetime achievement award would go to Tom Brady. But yeah, I mean, we had to do things like choose between JJ and TJ Watt brothers for that team. And the Big Ten ended up narrowly edging the SEC when we did conferences. And what was interesting about that was I think the if we had done like 53-man rosters or, shoot, 100-man rosters, the SEC probably would have won running away. But when we just did 22-man starting lineups, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, the Big Ten ended up winning probably on the strength of that quarterback position. But, yeah, today we went down with the individual schools, and it was LSU, Alabama, and Ohio State. And what really interested me about that is we first conceived this idea last year before a couple of those schools had quarterbacks, Joe Burrow and Tua. And there was some debate. Would you rather have Michigan with Tom Brady but some holes elsewhere, you know? But now that LSU, Alabama, and Ohio State have quarterbacks in the NFL, in addition to all their other talent, those three just have everyone else beat.
And you were good to the Bills also in terms of the ultimate all-conference teams there. You had a handful of Bills players on the current roster on that list there, whether it was, you know, Tre'Davious White or Micah Hyde, or I saw Tremaine Edmonds on the defense team for the ACC. Yeah. He had a healthy number of Bills.
Yeah, now, look, Tre'Davious White, what a show of respect for him. I think one of the hardest decisions we had to make in this entire project was the SEC secondary. Marlon Humphrey and Patrick Peterson don't make this team. First team all pros, both of them, because Tre'Davious White beat them out to be the starting SEC corner. So that's obviously high praise for him.
And then, go ahead.
The other thing, Mike, I wanted to just check in because, you know, we see these divisions all kind of realigning and reloading. And, you know, as you mentioned, the Saints have kind of been the class of the division the last few years. Has Tampa done enough to kind of vault themselves into the number one contender for the division with New Orleans? Or do you think, Atlanta can have a resurgence? Carolina seems to be full rebuild mode under Coach Rhule, so I don't want to discount them, but I don't want to say, hey, they're going to challenge for the division title. How do you kind of see, who do you see as their stiffest competition? Is Brady kind of done that for them?
I would probably have the same read on it that you just rolled through. And Atlanta's a little bit of a wild card because they struggled so badly last year. Were they like 1-6, 1-7? There was talk of Dan Quinn being fired before they rallied back. Now they've retooled a little bit too, letting go of Devontae Freeman and Desmond Trufant. So there's a rebuilding in some places there, but they've still got Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and added Todd Gurley, and there's still a lot of talent there. So they're one of those teams that you could tell me they went 6-10, you could tell me they went 12-4, and neither one would totally shock me. But I think you have to consider Tampa Bay the lead contender because they were hovering around 8-8. These last few years, even before they added Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, I'm not going to call them the front runner to win the division ahead of the Saints, though. I mean, we've just seen time and time again that when you build these sort of dream teams, quote unquote, it doesn't happen overnight all the time. But boy, that is going to be fascinating to watch what Tom Brady can do in another office for the first time in 20 years. And they're sure going all in to make a run at it, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Thank you for being here, Mike. We appreciate it. Have a good day, and I hope you stay safe during the pandemic.
Thank you. You guys, too.
Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, covers the Saints. He's been doing that since 2005. He also contributes to ESPN Sports Center and ESPN Radio. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown here in Buffalo. We're on One Bills Live. We're presented by Kaleida Health. Coming up, it's NFL True False right after the break. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
It's better over here. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Steve Tasker and Chris Brown here, 1-5. It's time now for NFL True False. We'd also like to thank Mike Triplett for coming in. He covered the Saints since 2005. Had some interesting things to say about the Drew Brees controversy that flared up during the protests of this past week. We're about ready now, though, Brownie, to have NFL True False.
Let's do it, man.
Brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Here we go. True False, number one. The most missed opportunity of the National Football League's offseason was the Patriots not acquiring an accomplished quarterback. True or false?
I guess I would say true, because there were certainly opportunities to land a more experienced quarterback of greater ilk, whether it was Andy Dalton, who was ultimately released and subsequently signed by the Cowboys. I'm sure he didn't have any interest in Jameis Winston because Belichick loathes turnovers. But there were options out there that were certainly better than the lot they're going to cast their die with here in 2020 in Stidham and Hoyer. Now, I do know they think a lot of Stidham, but you're putting an awful lot of eggs in that basket right now. And your contingency plan is a quarterback who I don't believe has a winning record as a starter in Brian Hoyer. So it's risky. I don't think there's any question that it's risky, and I don't know that it's all going to come together. I think they'll be competitive and stay in games just because their defense is still going to be pretty good, especially on the back end, but they got a lot of doing to accomplish at the linebacker spot after losing 3 of the 4 starters there. So I think people are like, oh, you know, their defense will hold them in games and, you know, they won't have to score 30 points. They can score 20 and win enough games. I don't know if that's completely true. I think this is going to be a step back year for sure for them, and part of the reason why will be the growing pains they're likely to experience at quarterback.
Well, I think they're going to be better than that. But I do think it's the omission of them not getting a quarterback is the most glaring omission of the offseason. Certainly there may turn out to be less of a problem than we think. Maybe Stidham's better than we think. Their defense will be just as good, even if though they've lost a bunch of guys on the front because their back end is so solid. You know, I think they're going to be a competitive team, but I think when you lose a void, and when Tom Brady leaves and creates a void of that caliber and of that magnitude, promoting from within usually is not an option. You need a guy to come in and take over. And like you said, there's a ton of guys out there that could choose from Joe Flacco, who won a Super Bowl, Cam Newton, who's still out there, Jameis Winston, Nick Foles changed teams this year. There's certainly a lot of enough options out there that they could have gone out and changed quarterbacks and gotten what would have been at least perceived as an upgrade. And I think the fact that they didn't says volumes about a couple of things. It says volumes about something, and is it either how much faith they have in Jarrett Stidham or how good they think they're going to be with him in other places and how many weapons they're going to put around him. Do they think their wide receivers, when they get healthy and have a year off, like Edelman, if he comes back and plays healthy, he was beat up last year. If N'Keal Harry comes back and plays well, if Mohamed Sanu comes back and gets healthy, those guys are going to be good enough to win with. Okay. But I think that says, I think the fact that they didn't make that move at quarterback says a lot about the faith they do have in Stidham and about the faith they have in the rest of their roster. So I think while it was the most glaring omission, I think it remains to be seen whether it was the void we think it was when Tom Brady left.
Yeah, and I think the other reason they didn't want to invest heavily in quarter or reinvest heavily in quarterback is because of the money they're eating right now on Brady.
$12 million, yeah.
So I think that's another component to that as well.
Yeah, I think so too. I do. I think it's true. I think it is the most, I think it's the most telling story of a team not acquiring a player at any position in the offseason in the NFL. If there's a, you know, everybody loses a player here and there, but for the Patriots to lose Tom Brady and just like say, okay, virtually, right? They just said, okay, that's fine. We're good without him. We're not replacing him. We're just, we got a guy. We're going to be fine. That,
yeah, it's like,
to me, is unbelievable. So we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. That's the biggest story of personnel moves in the offseason. Second one, NFL true false number two. If there are no fans in the stands, the players should be mic'd up. They should mic up like all the players, just about all the players. I hope, you know, and now they mic up like one or two guys a game, right? What would it be like if they mic'd up, you know, like you say, 22 guys, you know, or 15 guys, you know, six on offense, six on defense on both teams, right?
They better have a very quick editor to turn that around because they're going to have to bleep out a lot of stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff would be unlistenable.
It would have to be reviewed, and then you play it back, you know, later in the broadcast. Like, oh, here's the confrontation between these two guys, and then you insert all your bleeps, and I guess off you go. And I can't imagine that the coaches want 10, 11 players mic'd up a game. There's just going to be maybe too much risk with, you know, play calling and pre-snap communication and all that stuff that they probably don't want out there. And yeah. I think it also presents the other part of this, Steve. And I know I mentioned this last week when I was on with you, that German soccer league, they started piping in fan crowd noise on the broadcast. Not in the actual stadium for the players. That's still a quieter environment, but they're doing right. It on the broadcast to make it feel more realistic for fans watching at home. And having watched it with none of that noise the week prior, and then watching a game last weekend in which the noise was piped in, from a pure fan standpoint, I think I liked it better with the noise piped in. With the fan noise being there. And it was interesting because they said this isn't just some three-hour reel of fan noise that they were utilizing. They actually had a guy that was choosing different fan reactions based on how the game was unfolding. So if there was like a questionable foul called or like an offsides called that was really close and questionable and it was against the home team, he had like a negative fan reaction that he just pressed the button and bang, it was going. But it was all seamless. It was really impressive. But they literally had a fan reaction guy who called up the right fan reactions based on the circumstances in the game. Now, I don't know if the NFL is going to go that far, but it made it feel more like a real game. I will say that.
I have to take your word for it. It sounds ridiculous to me.
It
but
does.
I get it. I get
it. Give it a try, though, if you get an opportunity.
Right. I don't want to poo-poo it before I hear it or see it. But to me, it sounds like a ridiculous contemplation to do that. On the other hand, the question we have, you know, should players be mic'd up? Yeah, I don't have a problem with the players being mic'd up. Obviously, I don't have any skin in the game. I mean, it's not my competitive advantage I'm risking if somebody says a word or a phrase that's part of is the crux of the game plan or whatever, they can decipher meetings, that kind of thing. But I do say that I do know this. And I said this earlier in the week that maybe if you have like on regular national broadcasts like CBS, NBC, Fox, you name it, on the regular broadcast, it's a G-rated. Everything is homogenized. There's no language or anything like that for the broadcast. And if you want, you can go back and you can watch it on a live feed on your computer that is unfiltered. You can hear every word of it if you want. You know what I mean? So there's a G-rated version, an R-rated version, and then there's the unfiltered version or whatever. You'd have whatever gradients you want. But certainly there has to be a way that, you know, you don't have to subject yourself to the language that that I spoke for all those years. Right? So, you know, you need to have a way. I think it'd be very interesting for fans, particularly, you know, guys who are in the room with all their buddies and they're used to the kind of rough language that you might hear. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, for a regular broadcast, when you're sitting around the house and, you know, the kids are running around, you know, it's inappropriate. And you're certainly not going to get the players to stop. I mean, they're playing for all the marbles. And
yeah, they're all charged up.
Yeah, they've got a lot of emotional content there. So I think you would, if you mic them up, you're going to have to have a plan for that. And whether it's unfiltered or homogenized, I think it'd be very interesting.
Interesting, yes. I just don't know how realistic it is to mic everybody up because it's just like,
right.
You know, I don't know. So
they must feel like they'd be able to do it technologically.
Yeah, that's a lot of different frequencies you're using in one stadium. So I'm just going to say false just on the basis of logistics.
Yeah, and for what we're talking about, they have a guy at every stadium, and this will give you a little insight, a little peek behind the curtain. There is a frequency, officer?
Coordinator.
Coordinator, right. So here's the thing. Every headset for both teams, the media. Headsets for security, for media, for medical people, management, all of these different entities have their own radio frequency that they use for wireless communication in the stadium. And they've got all this stuff going on at the same time. And they've got a guy who's a frequency coordinator who goes around pregame and checks all the frequencies. Like me as a sideline reporter, I was always, I was like, here, and they go, okay, you're good. So add 22 guys, add 20 more frequencies to that, and it's going to be an issue. Technologically, you'd think in this day and age, they can do it. Well, it's not that easy. And I'll tell you this, it's not going to happen if it costs a dime more. That's for sure. So if it's going to cost the football side of it a dime more, they're not going to do it. So forget it. Right?
Yeah, and I'm sure the television networks would want to try to make it work. So I don't know how much they'd want to invest, but... Right. It'll be interesting to see if they do it, how much is it expanded?
So you think it's true or false? Yeah, it's true or false.
I just think false from a logistics standpoint. I don't see how they do it on a wide level.
Yeah, I'm going to say true because I think even if they'd only do it on the level they've got now, they'd pick the right guy and you'd hear it and it'd be fun, I think. All right, NFL true false, last one, number three. Texans are the biggest sleeper team of 2020. The reason this got thrown in there is because there's an article out the Texans are in there as the biggest sleeper team because the odds of them winning the Super Bowl are 55-1.
Yeah, Vegas isn't feeling too good about them.
Right, for a team that won a playoff game last year and they've got a quarterback that's coming back. I think the DeAndre Hopkins trade hurt them. I think they brought in a high-priced running back who's been injured. That hurts them. It's hard to see the Texans maintaining the level of play that they have in the last year or two into this year, right? Particularly with this offseason?
Yeah, the issue I have is actually with their defense. I do like the guy they drafted in the second round in Ross Blacklock from TCU. I think he's going to be a nice replacement for DJ Reader, who signed elsewhere in free agency. But, I mean, is J.J. Watt going to actually play a full season?
Right.
I mean, I have respect for... Whitney Merciless, but he's getting long in the tooth too. So I just don't know where their consistent pass rush is coming from if J.J. Watt cannot stay healthy. And that has been a problem each of the last few years. And I think if Garyon Conley is their starting cornerback opposite Bradley Roby, I think they have another problem. I know they tried to retool the wide receiving core. They've got Brandon Cooks there now.
Randall Cobb. Will Fuller.
To work in the slot.
Kenny Stills. So they got some guys, yeah.
Right. Will Fuller's another guy that can't stay healthy. I don't know if he's played 16 games yet in his career in a single season. So that's part of the issue. And do you call him a sleeper? I don't know. They've made the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, maybe a sleeper Super Bowl team, you would say. I think they're going to be hard-pressed to win the division this year with Tennessee on the come and with Indianapolis much improved and with Rivers at quarterback now. So maybe it's semantics, but I'm having a tough time, despite my respect for Deshaun Watson and everything he can do to kind of cover up shortcomings that your team might have. I just don't see him winning the division this year, and I think more because of what I think they're lacking on defense than anything else. So I'm going to say false just for the heck of it.
That's it, though. That's what they say. It looks like they're not going to be very good, and all of a sudden they are. That's why they're asleep.
Right, but I don't think they are going to be as good as people
think
they are, despite Vegas being against them. Well, I don't think they're bad, but I could see them very easily being 7-9, 8-8, because I think the other division opponents that they have gotten better.
Yeah, that you're saying their odds should be 55-1 because they got no shot, right? And I think you're right.
Pretty
I think
much,
they're not
yeah.
they're not winning the Super Bowl this year, and in fact, I think they're going to be worse this year than they were last year.
They could be. They might not even make the playoffs.
Right. So I think yeah, if you're going to say sleeper, that means you think they're that everybody feels like we do, but you think they're going to win. Neither of us think they're going to. All right, we're going to take a break. That was NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, we're here till 3. This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health on Buffalo Bills Radio. We'll be right back. What do we learn? Brought to you by Skyworks, the official construction equipment rental company of the Buffalo Bills. Earlier in the show, Chris Brown, my co-host, got me on a Tasker's teammate. On the eighth clue, I managed to finally guess who he was talking about. Here's the clip.
I'll go to clue 8. Okay?
Oh, no.
After I retired from football, I served as a county sheriff down south where I live now.
Leon Seals.
Bang! You got it! And we have Leon on the phone right now.
Leon Seals. Dr. Sack, what's going on?
Man?
Hey, that is awesome.
Hey, I love those clues.
I apologize for not being able to guess you after the first couple of clues, man. That was me trying to guess Leon Seals. Nice job by Chris Brown on that on the Tasker's teammate. It took me all the way till the final clue to finally guess it. He's a police officer, now an elected official down around Jackson, Mississippi. Good for Leon. Also on the show, Mike Triplett. On what Taysom Hill of the New Orleans Saints, Mike Triplett covers the Saints and has since 2005. He had some words about Taysom Hill and his valued role on the New Orleans Saints. Here's what Mike had to say.
First of all, they genuinely believe he could be the next starting quarterback of this team. They're not married to him, obviously, because they brought in Jameis Winston and they'll consider other options, but they really believe, and I would almost paint him as the front runner right now to be the successor to Drew Brees. But in the meantime, they're not just going to lock him away and save him for 2021. He's going to continue to be one of the most valuable playmakers on this team. I mean, he was probably the best or the most effective playmaker on the field for them in their playoff loss to Minnesota as a runner, as a receiver. And he's going to continue to do things, and that's why it was so valuable for them to bring in a Jameis Winston who can be ready to go in the game if Drew Brees gets hurt. So they're not just saving Taysom Hill in a backup QB role.
It's interesting, Brownie, that Taysom Hill has made himself that valuable to that team as a backup quarterback.
Yeah, and it's clear they're grooming him for something bigger when Drew Brees finally decides to call it a career. But the different ways that Sean Payton's able to get him involved in the game plan is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And his abilities to get it done, I mean, they've asked him to do a lot of things, too. You say, well, he runs the ball really well. They've also had him throwing the football out of that option, as too. So it's been interesting to watch how Sean Payton uses him.
It'll just be curious if Jameis Winston finds a way to get on the field. Like, if Brees gets hurt, God forbid, and misses a game or two, do they go with Winston or is Hill the full-time quarterback? I think that's an interesting debate to have if, God forbid, something happens to Brees.
That's it, Brownie. Great week. Great. I'll see you Monday. You'll be with me all week. That's Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, all
back in the saddle.
Back in the saddle. We'll have more of Tasker's teammates. We'll have more guests next week. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. This has been Buffalo Bills Live, brought to you by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.